She was wearing a tailored blouse, but her auburn hair hung loosely to her shoulders. After hours, Dan guessed. Alone in the office after a long, busy day. "Hello, Jane," he said, sitting on the edge of the bed.
"I got your call," she said.
"I wanted to wait until everybody was out of the office before I called you back."
"Yeah, I figured that's what you'd do." It was a lie, he knew. But now that he thought about it, he realized he should have known it all along.
"Morgan was very impressed with you."
"It was good to see you again," he said.
"He wants to work your satellite program into his energy policy, Dan."
"Haven't seen you since the day after the bridges went down."
"Dan, let's stick to the business at hand."
"You're the business at hand, as far as I'm concerned." She tried to frown at him, but a tiny smile curved the corners of her mouth slightly.
"Dan, that was a long time ago."
6 years, 1 month, and... It took him a moment to count it out in his head. 11 days. She looked away for a moment, and when her eyes returned to him, she had regained control of herself. Completely serious now, she said,
"If you want Morgan's support, Dan, you've got to promise that you'll support his candidacy."
"Sure, I know. One hand washes the other. That's politics. But you're the only one I'm interested in."
"And not your power satellite?"
He took a breath. "You come first, Jane."
"I didn't in San Francisco."
"You do now." "I'll drop this whole project. I'll sell it off to Yamagata or Garrison or the local junkyard." This time she really smiled, but her eyes remained sad.
"I know you think you would, Dan, but we both know it's not true. You couldn't give up your work, your life."
"Try me."
"And you mustn't sell out your project to the Japanese or the oil interests."
"I'll be a senator's husband. I'll sit home and stay quiet and show up at parties with you and take you home and make love to you all night long and well into the morning." Her smile faded.
"Dan, it's too late for that."
"Why? You tied up with Scanwell?"
"It's just too late for us, Dan. We both have more important things to do."
"I don't give a damn about any of that. I love you, Jane. There's nothing more important to me than you."
"Yes, there is," she insisted. "Getting Morgan elected president is more important. Getting the United States off its dependence on Middle Eastern oil is more important."
He shook his head. "Maybe it is. But that's not my department. The world will have to take care of its own problems. You're the only one that I'm interested in."
"Dan, the country needs Morgan Scanwell in the White House. None of the other candidates have the guts or the vision."
"You're sleeping with him, aren't you?" The question didn't seem to surprise her. She replied stiffly,
"That's none of your business, Dan."
"Yeah, right. And neither is Scanwell. You can both go jump in the Gulf of Mexico."
"Dan, you can't..."
"Good luck on your way to the White House, Jane." He banged the phone's off button so hard he nearly knocked the console off the night table. Houston, Texas. As he flew the butter-yellow Beech Stagger Wing into the old Hobby Airport, Dan thought that Houston's sprawl of high-rise towers looked like some Hollywood designer's concept of what the city of the future should look like. All glass and steel, one building gaudier than the next. Adair had offered to pilot the plane, but Dan told him to stay with the FAA team investigating the accident. He flew to Houston on his own in the company's little puddle jumper, a venerable Stagger Wing biplane. It was slow and noisy, and it vibrated like a kitchen Cuisinart. But Dan loved the old beauty, loved her graceful lines and her faithful reliability. He and Tenney had personally rebuilt it, and he cherished every bump and rattle as he lined up the biplane for final approach, bouncing around in the jet wash of the Boeing 737 touching down ahead of him. Garrison had a limousine waiting for him on the ramp as Dan taxied to a parking slot. He grabbed his summer-weight jacket and stepped down from the plane. The African-American chauffeur standing next to the limo in the soggy heat was in black livery. Dan felt sorry for him. As he walked to the limousine, the chauffeur opened the back door for him. Dan noticed that the motor was running and the air conditioning was on full blast. He didn't have the heart to tell the guy to turn it down a notch or two. Garrison's office tower was also cooled enough to raise goosebumps. Dan was met at the lobby reception desk by a sleek, long-legged brunette with a warm smile and sexy eyes. She led him to an elevator marked private, which whisked the two of them nonstop to the top floor of the skyscraper. When the elevator doors opened, Dan saw that the whole penthouse floor was one single expanse of lush greenery. "Looks like Jurassic Park," he blurted. The brunette's smile turned a little brittle.
"Mr. Garrison loves nature," she murmured.
Nature, Dan thought as he followed his escort past trays of colorful flowers and huge tubs that contained real trees. The place smelled like a garden, even down to the scent of fresh-cut grass, but he wondered if it was real or piped in with the cool air that sighed through vents in the green-painted pipes twined overhead. The ceiling was mostly glass, deeply tinted to keep the place from turning into a solar oven. Garrison's turned the top floor of this high-rise into a by-damn greenhouse, Dan saw. He probably thinks of himself as an ecologist, while his riggers are out digging up half the world to find more oil. Through an archway of carefully pruned greenery they walked, past a pair of desks flanking their green-carpeted path, each occupied by another sleek-looking young woman. Garrison likes his scenery, Dan thought. Or maybe he has him here to impress visitors. They went around a 7-foot-high hedge, and there was Wendell T. Garrison himself, sitting in his powered wheelchair behind a desk big enough to land a helicopter on. Garrison was peering intently into a slim display screen as Dan and his escort came into his view. He looked up, and the screen slowly folded itself into the top of his massive desk.
"Dan Randolph," Garrison croaked,
his weathered face breaking into a big, welcoming smile. He backed the chair away from the desk and drove around it toward Dan.
"Sorry I can't stand up," he said, extending his hand.
Dan took it in his own. Garrison's hand felt cool and dry, reminding Dan of a snake's skin.
"Come on over here,"
the old man said, driving off toward a corner where a small round table stood next to windows that ran from floor to ceiling. Dan could see cars crawling along the city streets far, far below. It was almost like being in orbit, he thought.
"You can go now, sugar," Garrison said to Dan's escort. "If I want anything, I'll call."
Despite the lush garden and the hothouse atmosphere, the huge room was still cool enough for Dan to keep his jacket on. Garrison wore a gray business suit, his shirt collar unbuttoned and a bolo tie hanging loosely down his shirt front, which was as wrinkled as his wizened face. Dan couldn't make out the greenish-gray stone in the bolo, although its setting was clearly silver.
"You want anything? Drink? Lunch?"
"No, thanks," said Dan as he sat next to the old man.
"Okay, then let's get right to business."
"Suits me fine."
"You need a cash influx. I'm willing to put a bill or so into your company. How much of a percentage can I buy?"
Dan was a little taken aback by his bluntness, but decided that he liked the direct approach. "Mr. Garrison, I don't want to sell any part of Astro Corporation to anybody. I want to keep control of my company."
"Of course, of course. But what you want doesn't jibe with your financial situation, now, does it?"
"I'd be glad to borrow $1 billion from you," Dan said.
"At today's interest rates?"
"LIBOR plus 1%. LIBOR plus 1%.
"The Brit banker's rate? How about prime from the good old USA? Plus 2.
"The London interbank rate suits me better." Garrison laughed, a wheezing cackle.
"Hey, well, you got balls, I'll say that much for you."
Smiling back at the old man, Dan replied, "And I don't intend to give him away." Garrison nodded.
"Can't say I blame you. How'd you like that cutie that brought you up here, eh? I can fix you up with her for dinner tonight."
"I'll be going back to Matagorda tonight."
"Huh.
About that loan?"
"Not interested in a loan, son. If I put out money for you, I expect a share of your company. That's reasonable and fair."
Dan nodded. He had to admit Garrison was right.
"Who owns Astro now?"
From the look in the old man's flinty eyes, Dan figured he already knew such details. "I do," he answered. "Most of the shares. Sunk every penny I ever saw into it."
"Uh-huh. And who else?"
"A couple of banks. A lot of smaller investors. My employees own a chunk." Garrison scratched at his chin.